kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have a fun show lined up, and we're kicking things off. Pernell Vaughn, you're here. How are you doing?
I'm doing hotly. How are you doing?
I'm doing the same. Summer can kiss a dick.
Yes, it really can. And everybody out there who's been excited for summer and how awesome it'll be, I hate you. Summer's hot. Nobody, I don't know anybody out there that says they love summer while also not running an AC system.
24/7.
Yes. And a lot of those people don't pay for the electricity that runs the AC. So it's like, summer's great. I can't wait to stay in the house all day and not want to go outside because I'm sweating through my pants. Like, yeah, this is perfect. This is not kosher. It's just, there's nothing to it. And when you were a kid, summer was great because you got off from school for 3 months. Who the hell gets off from work for 3 months? Teachers. I hate them too. But I actually love teachers. They do a lot of hard work for us, and they don't get enough respect. But still, as far as the actual vacation thing goes, I'm jealous and I want it. Nobody else should clamor for summer because we get nothing for it. Yay, it's the beach. Yeah, spend money.
Too goddamn hot. And the worst part is, I don't know if I've mentioned this on the show before, but while I'm recording the show, I cannot have my air conditioner running because it's too loud and the microphone would pick it up.
Definition of suffer for the art.
Exactly. So listeners, I do this for you. And I don't know why.
Because it's fun. Fun. And hot.
It always seems we talk about the weather when you're on. Do you want to hear something fun that happened?
Hopefully it's not fun as in like sarcastic fun.
Oh, very sarcastic. Last week, I went to GameStop and I bought a new controller, one of those Shadow Blue ones, Ocean Shadow, how it's like the black at the top and the blue at the bottom. I've been looking for one of those. And with Ashley and I, we're going to be moving soon, where we actually picked up a second Xbox to have in a den room. And I figured I could have one of these, you know, Ocean Shadow controllers to have for our spare Xbox. And yay, it'll be really cool.
Rewind this. You got a second. Where's the first going to go?
In our living room.
Oh, so you'll have like two like big, you know, like guest style rooms.
Yeah,
like
we'll have the living room, and then I'll have like an office area for my computer and for the Xbox. And while Ashley's watching TV, I could be in the den area playing Xbox and covering stuff for reviews for this show.
In that case, I better not. I could go into this, so I better let it go. Tell me the rest of the story before I get to sidetrack.
But I went and I picked up the controller, brought it home, and it wasn't working right. It wasn't staying synced. And I figured, you know, I'm going to take it back to the store. They had another one. I'll get it tomorrow. That night, Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, the mountainous region of Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, had a motherfucking tornado.
Whoa, what?
The store is gone.
It actually took out the entire store?
Completely gone. Destroyed.
You do realize that after this episode, I'm going on the news and reading about this stuff, because first question comes to mind, like, when was the last time Wilkes-Barre got a tornado?
I don't know if we've ever had one.
Yeah, I'm like, I've never heard about this, but it's like the moment you needed the store to be open, a tornado comes through and destroys a set of employees' livelihoods.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm friends with half the people who work at that store, and, you know, I was talking to the one at a different GameStop. Thankfully, they've all been put to different GameStops until they reopen a new store. He said he was there until 9:45 that night, and the tornado struck around 10.
And considering that it trashed the store, it's a good thing he got out of there, because it could have been something ridiculous, like, oh, we better stay here and hunker down for the storm.
Yeah. Like,
hunkered under it.
If you want to see more info on it, go to WNEP.com or PAHomepage.com. Those are like the local news websites, and I'm sure you'll find plenty of footage and everything else on there. It was fucking, it's weird to say, we had a tornado in our area. I'm not like in Wyoming or Nebraska or Kansas or, I don't know, who has fucking tornadoes? Do any of those places have tornadoes?
Maybe they all picked up and moved to your place because they're like, you know, it's too hot over here. We don't want to deal with this anymore.
Yeah.
Let's pick up and go to the mountains. It's vacation time, children.
Oh, that's not the only story that we could share today. You have a story of your own. You went
not
to
a tornado,
E3.
Not aboard a tornado.
No. I flew there.
Yeah, I took a traditional plane. No crazy storm patterns or anything like that.
So how was E3?
E3 was crowded, very crowded, and a lot of exercise. My pedometer, I trashed my pedometer goal every day that I was there.
Nice.
I was there on behalf of a website I write for, and I had a number of meetings I had to attend during the time I was there, and I'm glad for that because, in a lot of respects, those meetings are the only reason I got to play a lot of games. I did. Because lines were stupid long, and I'm impatient. So what do I mean by long line? So at one point, I got a text from a friend who told me, who asked me, rather, to pick up apparently a limited edition gold Shadow the Hedgehog Funko Pop. They were only being sold at E3, and his friend wanted one, and he owed him a favor. So I was like, you know, no problem. You know, it's a small request. I can buy it and get it home to you, and then you can just pay me back.
Did you say Shadow the Hedgehog?
I did.
Who Golden the fuck wants Shadow the Hedgehog?
I don't know. Somebody put a Funko to go with their firearms collection. I don't know. but I go to the booth, which, funny enough, was run by GameStop. And that's, for the record, how you can, going back to your earlier GameStop story, that's how you know a game con is 100% got to the point of commercial, when GameStop's got a booth and selling stuff there.
God.
But they were selling them. So I went over to the booth, and the line zigzagged and then went around the booth and then down the hall. I was like, well, my friend's not getting shit. I'm leaving. And it turned out apparently a lot of those people that were in that line were only at the con for that figure, as in they bought the $250 gamer pass just to go and buy a Shadow figure. Funko Pops are stupid. Next thing.
Yeah, they are.
It's like, I used to think they were cool. I mean, you know, cute little figures, you know, big puffy eyes, and a lot of times they have ones for characters that don't get representation in the collectibles market. And then they just kept going. And then hundreds and hundreds and hundreds later, they have the same goddamn face, and it's just ridiculous. I mean, I get people like to collect stuff. Hell, I collect Garbage Pail Kids. Look at me over here.
Hell yeah, but, man.
Yeah, I love my Garbage Pail Kids, but I can't get behind the Funko Pop. The funny thing is,
I literally just bought 4 Funko Pops today, and I agree with you that they're stupid.
Once you're in, though, it's hard to get out. It's like how I am with Amiibos and Skylanders. I was buying them all, telling myself how dumb they were as I handed over my credit card half the damn time. But I'm thankful I never started Funko Pops, because I'd probably be still buying those, clogging up my damn game room, crying about it. Because that's what I would do. It's just the kind of man I am. But, yeah, that whole thing went south. I did unfortunately miss the guy who does the Cimarron Kagura series. I was real sad about that, because, as he calls himself, the champion of boobage or something. It's just a hilarious title. I'd want to go shake his hand and just ask him, where in the hell did you come up with this title for yourself? Like, did someone give it to you? Were you just walking through downtown Shibuya one day, and someone goes, oh yeah, the champion of boobage right there, let's be friends or something. And he, oh, that's me now, I'm taking that title. But I missed him, unfortunately. I did win a contest, though, or not win. I got a win in the contest, but not the win, because I still think that kid was a ringer. There was a competition for a game called MuSync. It's an upcoming rhythm game that's going to be on the Switch, I think, next week.
Nice.
The company was there showing the game off, and they had a competition where the goal was to get the highest score on a specific song with specific settings. I never played it or heard of the game prior to this meeting. I go in and I play it the first time, and I get 117%, which is damn near perfect. And the guy goes, oh, wow, that's amazing. You're on the list. There you go. And the top score, however, was 121%. So I'm like, I can try. Maybe I can get that. So I tried again and again and again and again to the point where I got that weird condition where you can't blink properly because you stare straight at the screen for 2.5 minutes without blinking, because you can't miss a note. And I got to 120.56 or some crap. I was 0.6 or 7 below the score. And I had meetings to go to, so I had to abandon the game and walk away. But I was in second place at the time. And I was still kind of proud of that. But the first place was I got a Nintendo Switch and two games. And everybody from 2 to 10 down would just get a copy of one of the games, physical. And then the last 11 to 20 would get a digital copy of the game. And everybody else is just shit out of luck. But it turned out between when I left and when I came back to get the prize, there were a couple other people who got within that tiny window of 21 and 22, believe it or not. So I got bumped down to fourth place. But here's where things get sucky. So I was told to show up at 11 o'clock. No, not show up at 11. I said at 11 o'clock on Thursday, they would stop taking scores and they would announce the winners. But so I figured, I got a meeting here at 11:30 because I was there to see Monster Boy and the Cursed Kingdom. Freaking fantastic game, by the way. And I was like, okay, I'll go there at 11:30 for the meeting and pick up my prize at the same time. I get an email at 10:59 saying, congratulations on winning the contest. Get to the booth by 11 a.m. so you can get your prize.
Oh, God. They gave you a minute?
They gave me a literal minute. So I rode back like I am in the car driving to Los Angeles from Long Beach. Traffic sucks. I will be there by noon. Is that okay? And I didn't get a response. So I was like, okay, maybe it should be okay. Why would they give my prize away? They gave my prize away.
Son
they
of
gave
a
it to the next month. So I was like, oh, you gotta be kidding me. How? Like, no one told me this. This is ridiculous. And it would have ended there, except believe it or not, PM Studios has actually quality people working for them. Great people. So a guy named Steven, I'm not sure what his title is off the top of my head, but he's high up in there somewhere. He was the guy kind of overseeing the tournament. And he, after talking, he's like, I know who you were, man. I know you were busting your butt to get this prize. And it's a shame that it didn't work out. So he worked out something. He was like, look, when you get home and when we get back to our studio, we'll just mail you a copy directly. They basically apologized and offered to mail it to me. And he wrote me today without me even writing to him, even though he told me to if he forgot. Wrote to me, he's like, oh, hey, man, sorry about what happened. Give me your address, I'll mail it out. And they're pretty much mailing it out today. So,
nice.
PM Studios is quality stuff. I like those guys. I saw a couple of games via, like, videos and stuff. They put you in, like, theaters, like, Just Cause 4. I didn't care about that shit before. But now I'm kind of interested based on how the final product turns out. They added weather conditions that destroy things. And that
like
could
tornadoes.
Go... yep. And they showed a video because, of course, like it was like a beta build where like they were pretty much shown like in like testing code or whatever, where the tornado pretty much came through, like tore up an entire base and was picking up all the buildings and stuff. And there were like wind cans that could blow the tornado in other directions. And it looked really cool. But you know how that goes when you're an old ass man who doesn't trust promo videos anymore, which is that.
Oh, yeah.
That could have been a damn set piece. And I don't have time for set pieces. If the game's going to do it, it has to actually do it. Don't give me this. Tornadoes only show up at specific key points we set up, or the stuff will get destroyed. But if you leave the screen and come back, oh, there it is. It's back again. Like, there's got to be more to it than that. So I'm waiting for the final product instead of just getting myself all hyped up for a game that, you know, had like a preconditioned screening or whatever.
No.
But I'm trying to think, because there was a lot that took place there. I went and saw the Bethesda stuff. I feel a little bit better about Fallout 76, as long as I'm taking it from a different perspective. Because, I mean, a lot of people were upset about the change, quote-unquote. But the way I see it is, based on how they described it being a a Fallout with friends game, given how Fallout 4 turned out, and given that a lot of people that were fans of the old game weren't too... I mean, they liked Fallout 3, but they were like, yeah, it's kind of taking a weird shift or whatever. I feel like I'm okay with them taking another chance on something different. I mean, I've had Fallout 3, I had Fallout New Vegas, and unfortunately I had Fallout 4. So I'm okay with them trying something new to see if they can get something off the ground again. And it's not stopping.
I like Fallout 4.
Well, you know what I mean. It wasn't what I wanted, you know? Yeah. But it's not necessarily like a horrible game, it's just it was not what I was looking for. So it's like a company saying, hey, we gave you three games that fit a very similar mold. You've played them. We're going to try this other thing. If it doesn't work, hey, maybe we'll go back to the other thing. But I'm not, you know, upset about it. I'm interested in seeing where it goes. I like the idea of playing Fallout with friends and building like houses and stuff, and then like giant wind drakes come through and burn it down. It sounds kind of fun. Some weird monsters in that coming in on that game. Mm-hmm. So, but I'm trying to think of some other stuff because I'm weird about this stuff.
Did you make it to the Sony show?
I did not because I'm lazy. Didn't want to come into town for it. And I heard later that it was hard to get in, even though I didn't think it was going to be hard to get in. Like, apparently it was like a selective entry.
Did you watch it?
I didn't even watch it. Because wow. Where it gets weird. So what happened was the show was from Tuesday to Thursday, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I have one of my best friends moved to Los Angeles area, Long Beach, last year. And I had promised him I was going to come out and visit him at some point while, in the next year, being 2018. So timing was perfect that I was allowed to go to E3. And I wanted to go visit him so I combined the two trips. And I flacked out. The arrival time through Monday night to hang out with him. Then Tuesday through Thursday was pretty much E3. And then Friday and Saturday was back with him. So I didn't want to encroach upon that by saying, yep, I know I said this window, but Sony's got a show, so I got to leave. I was like, no, screw that. I don't need to go. I'm fine with him and my friends. So I didn't even pay attention to it. I ignored it. We just hung out for the most part. But so if anything, you know more, but you probably know more about that than me if you ended up watching it at all. But I didn't even check it.
Oh, yeah. If you didn't, you should go back and listen to our last episode. Me, Cole, and Chris spent a solid 2+ hours going over all of the conferences.
Damn. Yeah, I might have. Because I know what I did end up catching, like, kind of through proximity, that damn Nintendo conference. You want to talk about
Brothers.
Let me tell you something, man. So you got Microsoft announced a couple new games and touch base on some older games. I'm sure Sony did about the same thing. New games and touch on
Sony. Sony was fucking awful, man.
Damn.
Well, theirs was not good. They had great games this year, but their actual conference was just awful.
I'm sure it probably had that layer of, like, we are the company that has innovated for years, but today we're going on a new precipice of greatness or something, whatever buzzwords companies like to use. But
we're going to focus on four pillars of our gaming lineup.
It sounds about right. I'm like, look, here's some games. Watch this shit. So we know that they both kind of went that route. Nintendo, on the other hand, they had a number of new games that they were talking about, but the thing that shook the room was that damn Smash announcement. I was blown away. I was in the media lounge, so basically all the media people were in there charging their laptops and writing articles and stuff, and I'm sitting there with my cell phone because I'm too cheap to bring a laptop and drinking a freebie coffee, and the conference comes on. The actual convention isn't even open yet. There's a lot of media people sitting out in the lobby waiting to get in and other people in the media lounge. And when Smash Brothers came up, I am not making this up, like a huge roar just perked up. And when Ridley got announced, shut the fuck up. It was done. People lost their shit. And I'm sitting here going, you do realize, even though they're bringing some characters back and they added Ridley, this is still the same game that was on the Wii U and the 3DS. They just did. I mean, no, it's not bad. Don't get me wrong. It's good. Because everyone knew. Here's the thing. Everyone knew that a Smash Brothers update was going to come to the Switch due to how Nintendo's been doing it with pretty much all of their greatest Wii U games. They're just bringing them to the Switch and pretty much killing off the Wii U's value in the living room. Mm-hmm. So that part shouldn't even have been a surprise. And then there was some rumors saying that it was going to be a brand new Smash Brothers. So when the Ultimate showed up, if anything, I was slightly disappointed. I was like, oh, crap, this isn't a new Smash Brothers. It's the original rumor after all. But to be happy and to be in an outright uproar are two completely different things. I was happy to see it. I was not pissing my pants with joy over it. And they actually announced Daisy as an alt, which is about goddamn time. And that was my happiest thing about the whole thing. Screw Ridley. I want Daisy. And yet, people lost their shit. I don't know. Nintendo's like the goose that laid the golden damn egg. They really are.
Dude, and it's Smash Brothers. Smash is like a whole new tier of games anymore. There's only, what, 5 of them so far?
Yeah, but that's just it, though. Even though I'm referring to the press conference, it wasn't even just that. Even their booth was sick. So they had their main hits were the new Pokemon game that's coming out, the Smash Brothers game. They had Mario Tennis Aces set up, and like one other game that I don't even remember right now, and some like visual stuff. And you're probably wondering, well, Parnell, clearly you went to the Nintendo booth. You should be able to know exactly what they had. And the answer is, fuck lines. I did not. I spent more time, like, I got my preview of the Pokemon game by being a tall man who could look over a crowd and just visually see what the game was doing, because I didn't want to wait in a 4-hour line to play Pokemon Let's Go Eevee. Like, 4-hour line every time I went there. And I had a funny story about that. I went over at one point to go see about the Pokemon line. Of course, the line was closed, blah, blah, blah. Some guy walks up, a guy with the gamer pass. He goes, and I'm not even, this is his actual voice, I'm pretty sure. He goes, talks to the guy holding the lines. I was like, hi, hello. And the guy goes, hi. And he goes, today's my birthday. My birthday's today. Guy goes, oh, well, happy birthday, sir. Congratulations. And then he responds with, I'm going to need you to let me know when the line opens up. I need you to call me when the line opens up.
Oh, God.
Guy goes, dude, your birthday ain't that happy. Birthday ain't that happy. I lost my shit. Like, this dude just walks up. He somehow found $250 to come in there to spout that nonsense. Like, what? I got nothing. I got nothing.
Your that birthday shit. Ain't that happy. Oh, my God. That is amazing.
Birthday ain't that happy. Yes, but nothing. They ain't messing around. But, like, all these lines were, like, massively long. And it was just the fervor of people wanting to play the games. Like, it was insane. So as you could probably guess, I'm an impatient asshole. So I didn't do any line waiting. If a game required me to stand for more than like 10 minutes, I said, screw it. It's coming out eventually. So I didn't play Kingdom Hearts 3. I missed the cool Kingdom Hearts photo you could take with a giant key bleed. I didn't play Dragon Quest 11 because it's coming out in like September. The only big games I know I played was Shadow of the Tomb Raider. Shadow of the Tomb Raider. I played that for a bit. Man, I did a lot more reading and talking and interviewing than playing any damn games. Like, I'm sitting trying to think of the big games I played. I'm like, you know, I don't know how many of the big ones I did play. I play a lot of smaller games like Mutant League Football and nice. Some of the games, XSEED. They have like a game, another Shinran Kagura games come out. I was like, oh, still boobies, still fun. And there was like a weird game where you're harvesting a rice field and then you're beating up monsters with a hoe. Like, okay, sounds cool to me. But like, that's pretty much my main thing. I ran around the Bethesda booth for a bit. I won some Hyperkin stuff by beating a boss in Cuphead, which surprisingly a lot of people was not good at. I stood in line for 10 minutes to get a really cool set of Mega Man 11 photos. And while waiting in that line, it was freaking hilarious because I watched a bunch of people playing the demo because I didn't feel like, again, another set of lines I didn't want to wait in. But I watched people play the game, and in 11, they brought back the slide, unlike in 10 and 9. But apparently no one wanted to use the slide because they're stupid. And they all were dying like crazy because they're terrible at the game because they don't use the damn slide. Purists from the Mega Man world love talking about how great the game was at 2 and how the slide was unnecessary and unimportant. And those people are stupid. Or at least ignorant. Like, I understand hate the Mega Buster because it's loud and it sometimes devalues the boss weapons. But there is no reason to hate the slide at all. There's no reason to. It doesn't make an obnoxious sound. It adds maneuverability. It allows the creators of the games to give the bosses more patterns that can influence use of the slide so that the game gets a little bit more complication going into the actual design of the gameplay bosses and stuff. So, but people hate on it. They're insane. Whatever. And I watched them all die to Brickman and his stage, and I laugh. And I laugh some more. It was priceless. But I digress. Also, food was really expensive. Screw that noise. I paid $11.50 for cheese fries.
Jesus Christ.
I was that hungry.
Wait. Jesus Christ.
Cheese. Oh! Got them within the window. You get credit for it. But all in all, how I feel about E3 in a nutshell, unless you got any particular questions about it, is that I would not pay the Gamer Pass fee to go. Screw that. It is not worth it. But it's worth attending at least once if you can to see what all the hubbub's about and kind of be on the floor sweating bullets and getting sandwiched in with all the other people coming in to see games. But honestly, at this stage of the game, unless you really want to wait in line to play Resident Evil 2, which I did not, I just watched other people do it. And then I couldn't watch people play the game because they had it walled off. But I watched people wait in line to play the game. So I get a picture with the cool car they had, though. But ultimately, I think you get just as much information getting all the internet news at home. If anything, you get it faster because I can only get around the floor so much. Meanwhile, all you do is click a few screens and boom, all the information is right there, including photos that all the different people that work for the conference took or whatever. So it's solid stuff.
Yeah, if I were to ever go, it would strictly be to, like, talk to people and, set up interviews and everything. I really don't care about going to play stuff. I'd rather watch.
And I got to tell you, that's another hard thing, too. I'm trying to get interviews and stuff outside of, like, I guess I got to figure out how to do it for next year if I do it again. But So the guy I went, the website I went for, they set up a bunch of interviews and like press screens and stuff in advance. So essentially I showed up with a list of times and places I needed to be to interview these people and talk shop and stuff. But on the side, I was like, you know, I do music. Maybe I can get Rhythm and Pixels out there a little bit too. So I wore the shirt and I had stuff. And I was like, hey, we do music if you want to talk. And it's amazing how hard it is to get any leeway with anybody. It's almost like talking to like a brick wall that is running ahead of you, and you don't know when it's going to stop and slam you in the face. It was work, and I feel like if I do it again and I try again, I need to come with a better plan, because I feel like I could have done a lot better if I knew what I was getting into in advance.
Yeah, speaking of shirts, I want to give you a thanks for wearing the SML shirt while you were out there. I saw the pictures. That was awesome of you.
Of course, man. I got to represent for friends. My thought was like a Rhythm and Pixels shirt for one day. And I was like, I'm going to wear the SML shirt for the other day. It was the inaugural wearing of the shirt, so I was glad it fit.
Did anybody say anything?
Unfortunately, not for either of our stuff. But honestly, that's just how it goes. People, because you got to figure, it's one thing if you were at, say, like a, I don't know, like a local convention or something. But at E3, everybody's there representing some kind of podcast or YouTube show or something. So everybody's doing it. There was a point where there was like a big panel of people representing freaking Facebook gaming. By the way, did you know there was a Facebook gaming? Because I sure as fuck didn't.
No.
But there was like these six people on a panel playing You Don't Know Jack. And I'm just sitting there going, you know, I could be funnier than these guys. And they got a freaking contract with Facebook playing Jack at a conference. What is this? How do they do that? It's almost like they probably went to like the farmer's market in their local town. Like, hey, guys, you look like a group of corking gamers. Would you like to come on down and talk about entertaining folks for money? You can do that. Like, that's what it felt like. Like, I didn't see it. It was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. They weren't bad, mind you. I'm not even being that kind of like, I'm not that kind of dick. But I was sitting there going, like, there's what are they doing that I can't do? How do they get up there? Nuts. I think GameSpot had a thing like that too, where they had a booth of just personalities sitting on stage going, I really like when Kingdom Hearts had the Keyblade in it. Like, what is this? How do you guys do this? I want that shit. Give me the seat.
I like when Kingdom Hearts had a Keyblade.
My favorite part was when that Disney character showed up. He was a real quirky cow. I loved him so much.
I really like Sora's hair.
They did a lot to him. I think he's older now. Really? Really? He is? I didn't fucking know. It's just insane, man. It could be done. I just don't know how it's done. And those people are lucky as shit, and they better own it. Own it, because I want it, and I don't want to get it.
Man, I could listen to you talk about E3 for hours at this point, but we do have stuff that we got to take care of. You're here to review two games. We should probably get to those, huh?
Yeah, probably should. You're going to melt if we don't.
Now that we're a half hour into the show, but first game to talk about tonight is called East 8 Lacrimosa of Dana, developed by Falcom, published by NIS America. Chris Taylor, he'll love that NIS America, or NIS America to make him happy. It released June 26th on the Switch for $59.99. Adol awakens shipwrecked and stranded on a cursed island. There he and the other shipwrecked passengers he rescues from a village form a village to chant. I swear, every time I do this game, I say from a village instead of form.
They're all from a village in their own way, are they not?
True, but they form a village to challenge fearsome beasts and mysterious ruins on the isolated island. Amidst this, Adol begins to dream of a mysterious blue-haired maiden living in an unknown world. Join Adol as he unravels the mystery of the cursed isle and the blue-haired maiden. Purnell, tell us about East 8 on the Switch.
Well, as a person who bought the original PS4 release and is still sitting in its collector's box on my shelf unopened, I was actually happy to get this review copy because it gave me an excuse that I needed to cut in line and play this damn game. Even though I love the E-series to death, it's kind of sad that I didn't get to it until now. But I'm kind of glad that I waited because, as you well know, there was a lot of humorous, poorly translated moments in the game. Mm-hmm. How humorous were they? Well, there was one level called the Acrimosa Big Hole or something like that. I can't remember the first word, but the important part is it was such a joke that at E3, apparently somewhere around there, you were able to get a framed copy signed of that image showing that terrible location translation. but I digress. So apparently the Switch version of it has the fixed translation that they started working on back in January to address that those many issues. In addition to that, it got all the perks that the PS4 version that the PS Vita did not, but it also has the portability that the Vita version had, being that it's on the Switch. So it was just a perfect storm of joy for me. So I put a fair amount of time into it, played it on the go because that's what Pernell does with his Switch. And I came away very pleased with this title. So unlike other Ease games, you don't have like a currency system to play with. You don't find money because you're on an island with shipwrecked passengers. There is no need for money. You need food. You need supply. So as you and your party of adventurers run around exploring the island to look for other survivors and such, you acquire beast parts and materials like minerals and fish and things of that nature. And you can then trade those items into trading posts for other items. And then you can take those items to take a blacksmith on the island once you can find that person. And let me start off. I just rambled that shit up crazy. All right. So as you explore the island, you will find people that are running around lost after also being shipwrecked on the island. And once you find them, you can take them back to the main island village called Castaway Village, where they will ultimately provide a number of services for you, such as blacksmithing or tailoring of clothing or accessory building or medicine production. And to go back to the earlier point I was making, you can take the items that you acquire from exploring the island and trade them in for other items at a trading post that you'll form. And then eventually go to all those people I just mentioned where they can use those items to do things like tailor your weapons or forge new armor or make medicines for you and things of that nature. So it gets rid of money in favor of a collectathon, which is actually not a bad thing. It actually works out pretty well because you're finding item depots or depositories and killing monsters constantly to the point where you'll always have some volume of goods to work with, whether it be trading in for new items or just spending in outright. Combat is a blast. It is probably my favorite of the three action-y Ease games thus far. Action-y being Ease 8, Ease 7, and Memories of Celceta. It's faster. It has the strike, pierce, and slash damage combos, which will allow you to do more damage to enemies that are weak to them. And also, depending on if you do enough damage while using that form of attack, you'll perform a break, which allows you to get more rare parts and do more damage to that monster. But it also chains up another thing I liked, where you can actually find skills occasionally in treasure chests. So normally you would just find skills by leveling up or using enough special moves to eventually go, oh crap, I learned a new attack, which is always fun, of course, because then you'll just do the attack when you thought you were going to do something else. But now sometimes you can open a chest and find a skill scroll, which you can read for a character, and they'll just get a new attack immediately, which is kind of a nice thing to find when you're just kind of hopping about exploring the island. So it's honestly a lot of fun in that regard. I never got bored of it, even though I was playing it on Nightmare difficulty because I'm a masochist.
Oh, you are ballsy.
Yes, I am. I've been playing the games for so long now that it's almost no excuse for me to play normal. I gotta go on there and just wreck shop from the start. But, oh yeah, also, they brought back the Flash Move and Flash Guard abilities. Flash Move is when you dodge an attack just as it's about to hit you. Flash Guard is when you guard from the attack just as it's about to hit you. So Flash Guard is a lot riskier of a maneuver because if you dodge but don't get the flash move, you'll still dodge the attack. But if you don't get the Flash Guard right, you'll get your ass handed to you. So with the differences being that if you hit Flash Move properly, you will get a burst of speed and you'll slow down like a bullet time over, so you can kind of wreck shop on an enemy. But Flash Guard gives you an increase of your special attack gauge and it'll make you temporarily invincible. And you get the bullet time. So if you can pull off Flash Guards, not only will you look like a beast in combat, but you can exploit the hell out of it to just kind of wreck a monster. So they don't just give those things away. You actually have to earn them. So, but it's good. It's really good.
It sounds overall like it's the same Ease 8 that we know and love from other releases. So I want to know, how is the performance on the Switch?
I've had no issues with performance. And keep in mind, I was playing it on the handheld mode. So you might think, well, what about on the TV? Unfortunately, I'm stupid and didn't do that. But if you would expect anything to have a moment of problems, it would probably be the handheld version of the game as opposed to the TV output. And I had zero issues, no slowdown, no tearing. The only thing I ever really noticed was like maybe like the occasional moment where like I'd be up against a wall and like I say, a light flickering off of the edge of a cliff, and it seems like a little weird. Like, I don't know if that's how it's supposed to look, but that's more like the guy nitpicking, whole pushing his glasses up against his forehead. Go, oh, that light flicker is kind of weird. Like,
whatever. It's my birthday.
It's my birthday. Exactly. That guy. And so I honestly didn't even care. It wasn't a thing that bothered me. The game performed beautifully. The environments looked fantastic. The music, no skipping, no chipping. And it was glorious, too. And reaction times were perfect. 1-to-1. I didn't feel any moment where I could say, I lost this battle because the game screwed me on flash guarding. And again, I'm playing on nightmare mode. So if anything, I'd expect it to happen there. No such a case. It works fluidly. This is probably the version that I would buy if I didn't already have it on the PS4. But the other thing I want to mention, so if you bought the Vita version back in the day, this is probably worth upgrading for just in and of itself, because they did add the raid mode that the PS4 version had that the Vita did not, which was when every once in a while monsters will kind of rush the castaway village that you're building up with the villagers, and then you have to kind of work together to kind of fend them off. So it's like a side game where it's like a tower defense game, where like you're, well, not tower defense, but a area defense game, where there's like slabs of meat set up that's meant to deter the monsters from going right to the village, and you have to go and beat the tar out of them before they eat all the meat and then ransack the village. And it gets to be pretty chaotic and fun. And since the EZ games have such fun combat, it doesn't even feel like a bland side quest. You actually want to go have an excuse to beat more monsters up. It's kind of great in that way. If combat was boring, I could see you going, oh crap, another raid. But no, it's gold, baby. I love it. So I actually enjoyed every time those came up.
Nice. Only question left. $60. Your verdict.
Oh, if you don't own it on any other system, it's worth the damn money. If you own it on the Vita, it's still worth the money. If you have it on the PS4, but you wanted it on the go, it's worth the money. But if you have it on the PS4 and you don't care if it's on the go, you can skip it.
That is very comprehensive. Nice.
Kind of how it has to be, man. There's a lot of factors that go into this game.
Okay, what about the Steam version?
I'm not sure per se. The Steam version, well, nah, if you got the Steam version, it's probably the same condition, because I believe it's the same condition as the PS4, including all the dialogue patches and stuff. Though, actually, I take that bet. I was reading not too long ago that the Steam version still has a lot of glitches and errors and crap that they're still working on. So, honestly, this is probably worth a jump.
The Switch version is the definitive version for the most part.
I would say so, yes. Because, you know, you might say, well, the PS4 is comparable, but yeah, the PS4 version also doesn't have a patch that has a decent translation on it. It has to get patched in. It's already on this cart. So if you're the type of person like me who's like, I want the best of the product on a physical media product, here you go. It's on the disc for you right now. You don't have to worry about getting uploads from a server, you know, 4 years from now or whatever. So
awesome. Good stuff. You got one more game to talk about that is called Grab the Bottle, developed by Kamina Dimension, published by Sometimes You. It'll be out June 20th on Xbox One, PS4, and Switch for $4.99. Grab the Bottle is a puzzle game in which you solve puzzles by stretching an infinitely stretchy arm through various levels, grabbing and dropping objects along the way. Purnell, what is this one?
It's a very weird game. So it takes place across the life of an unnamed character who starts out as a baby and grows into a man, and throughout his life, he likes to drink things from bottles. And he wants to grab those bottles with his hand and then possibly drink them. They never show us what he does with them, but we just kind of assume he drinks the beverage. But how you go about this is by being a freak. So when you start each level, they will show you a bottle located somewhere on a stage and a room. And you have to extend your hand, or rather extend your arm, to get your hand to the bottle, which will then snap it back and conclude the stage. And it starts out fairly easily with you just dodging some obstacles, grab the bottle, bam, you're done. But then later on, they decide they want to introduce a few more mechanics. So the first mechanic they like to introduce is the fact that sometimes you have to pick up a few other objects on the level before you can collect the bottle. Why? I have no damn idea. You're getting the milk. Why do you need to pick pacifiers before you get the milk? I don't know. But they make you do this. So you'll have to collect the pacifiers first by extending the arm through the pacifiers and then grabbing the bottle and then pulling it all back. Then later they introduce a few more cool mechanics, which I actually did like. So in addition to just, you know, grabbing the bottle, you can also use your hand to push objects and pull objects and drop them. So what I mean by that is you might see a wooden plank stretched over one of the collectibles you need to get to, but you can't quite reach it. So what you can do is stretch the arm out to a certain distance to grab, let's say, a pebble or a stone. grab the stone, and then you'll start retracting the arm back. And at a certain point in time, you can push a button to let go of the thing you're dragging, and it'll fall and potentially break through the ceiling, and then you'll continue stretching the arm out. So you'll be doing a fair number of things like that. And also, you'll be pushing objects to make them, like a ball, roll out of the way so that it doesn't, you know, hinder your progress or whatever. So these are pretty much the things you have to do. And sometimes, of course, also dodge obstacles that might be moving on the stage. Grab your prey and get down to business, which is drinking that milk or drinking that beer or drinking that soda or drinking, whichever you want to do. It's a very simple game, though. I mean, I pretty much described it to the letter already. I mean, it's not a rocket science title. It's a quick pick up and play on occasion, which I pretty much did on the plane ride to and from E3. And it was honestly enjoyable for me. I had that penchant sometimes where I'll see a game like, oh, either it sounds like something I wouldn't like, or the art doesn't quite appeal to me or whatever, and I almost want to write it off. But honestly, when it came time to play the game, I enjoyed it. There are definitely a number of moments where I kind of felt like the hand was I had to go through an annoying struggle to get the hand to where I needed it to go in order to beat the level, like maybe move it through a very narrow passageway, and the hand controls kind of like a puck. What's that game I used to play? Super Off Road, how you used to steer the car like left and right based on how the hand is positioned or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
So that takes getting used to, and when you're trying to get it through like a really narrow passageway, it can be a pain in your ass. But, again, that's the nature of the game, about that finesse and getting the hand where you want it to go. Because you get three bops, which is, you know, you smash the hand to a wall or something before you fail the stage and have to try again. But all in all, I actually had a good time with the game. It's a good pick-up and play. It's not going to make the top of your list or anything like that, but it's a good try-it title, I would say. Well, I just cut ahead. Shit.
Yeah, you did. Cool. So $5. What's your verdict?
I'm kidding. It's definitely at least a try to me. It was a fun title. I don't think it's bad. The price is right. So
is it cheap enough to be fuck it? Why not? Just grab it.
Give me the price one more time. It's $4.99, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Fuck it. Why not? Just grab the damn game if you're looking for a little puzzle bub. It won't hurt you much.
Oh, sounds good. Pernell, it is always good having you on. It was fun having you on for a nice little extended chat as well.
I appreciate it, man. I had a great time, too. It was good to kind of let all that frustration out about birthday guys and long lines and piss and vinegar and all that stuff. Expensive food and shit. It was a good time.
Nice. So do you have any final words to wrap it up?
I guess if you're listening to this episode and you have thoughts on E3, let us know what your favorite moments of the conference were, because it would be cool. Like, mention on the Twitter or something, because it would be cool to see what they are, hear what you guys think they were.
Or you could email us at thesmlpodcast@gmail.com.
There you go. Two options. Two quality options.
All right, next game to talk about is called Arcade Archives Donkey Kong, originally developed by Nintendo Console Port, developed and published by Hamster, released June 14th on the Switch for $7.99. Donkey Kong is an action game released in 1981 by Nintendo. Avoid a variety of obstacles while heading through a construction site to make it to the top and rescue Lady. Use the hammer to destroy barrels and fire coming towards you to earn even more points. This version contains both the early and later versions, as well as the international version, so they are bringing the heat. Checking this one out, Chris Taylor, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great.
Heard you giggling at Lady's name.
Just Lady. Her name is Pauline.
Well, early back in the day, I guess it was just Lady.
Was it, though?
It's capitalized.
So. Oh.
Yeah, it's not Rescue a Lady, it just says Rescue Lady, L.
Capitalized, that's a title. So it's Lady Pauline.
Lady Pauline. How is Lady Pauline this fine evening?
So it would be Sir Jumpman? Something like that?
Squire Jumpman.
Squire. Jumpman Esquire.
Jumpman Esquire the third.
Oh, yeah. Anyway. All right, so, yeah, Donkey Kong. Well, hopefully everybody listening to this already knows what Donkey Kong is. If not, I'm thrilled to be the person to break the news to you. Donkey Kong is a Nintendo game from early on, prior to the NES, where Mario was but a mere jump man. Jump manning his way across some bent up girders. High beams, whatever. in dodging barrels thrown by the titular Kong in an attempt to rescue Lady Pauline. And you do this across three levels and then repeat until they make a film about you.
Yeah, it works.
Yeah, exactly. So, not a whole lot to discuss. Basically, the Arcade Archives version. What they've done is, of course, Arcade Archives and Hamster, by extension, are amazing when it comes to, like, these arcade ports, right? So, and in fact, this is the official first time that a port of the arcade Donkey Kong is available, like, in a actually, like, you know, perfect way. So that's at least something. So this is like the version that you would have had to play the board in order, you know, like the actual arcade game in order to play, or, you know, MAME, whatever. But officially, this is the first. And basically, they've included those three modes. So they've got the original, they've got the Japanese version, the old style original, and the new style, not original. At first glance, it appears that the only things that have really changed is that the first game, the original release said, like before every level, it's how high can you try? And then it tells you the distance you've gone. And then they changed that to how high can you get, which to me, that sounds a lot groovier.
Yeah.
And of course they kept the how high can you get for the international version and most of the other versions that emulate that front screen. But in reality, what they've actually done is the original version had a whole lot of bugs, and they took those out for a second release, and it was such a big deal, and people who play these kind of games are so, you know, particular about it, they included the bug-ridden version as well as the cleaned-up version.
Which is interesting that they would do that.
Yeah, the bug-ridden version is really interesting to watch. If you pull up a video of it or something, it basically has this glitch where you can jump backwards basically off the edge at a certain point and then just arrive at the top part of the screen and win.
Oh, that's cool.
So, like, actual game-breaking stuff. But for your, you know, run-of-the-mill Donkey Kong player such as myself, then it's not really going to make a huge difference. And, the international version, I couldn't even really tell the difference besides that they changed, you know, Nintendo of America and things like that. So, like, but for your Donkey Kong enthusiast, of which there are many, this is going to be the most complete experience you can get. And also, because it's Hamster, they add in the caravan mode, which is the get the highest score that you can in a certain amount of minutes and compare yourself against players around the world. I got 7,000 points, I think, and the number one record is 56,000 points, so I'm almost there.
Oh, you're working on it.
I'm working on it. And
got to feature Billy Mitchell here.
Yeah, I basically cheated and just wrote in the top score or whatever. That's not. Did you know that
400,000?
Did you know that Gimmick is in Walter Day's Hall of Fame?
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got awarded for it last year.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we have posters and stuff. Yeah, we're the only video game band in Austin that got one, so I'm like, okay.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, the only record I know of that we have is the longest time working on an album.
So you got some time to take over Guns N' Roses for that one.
Yeah, I guess it's true. But yeah, speaking of, Donkey Kong. So that's basically all there is to say about it. It's just the different modes. It's Donkey Kong. It's real and it's good. Plays really well. Looks great in portable mode. You can play the game in vertical mode. So if you want to stand up your Switch to do that or, you know, spin around that old TV, you can get that good big screen experience. Or, you know, you can check out the freaky ass DOS computers or MS-DOS version from 1983.
Oh, God.
Or the ZX Spectrum one.
Oh, Jesus.
Those are great.
I grew up with the ColecoVision version.
Ooh, Yeah, that's rough.
It was better than the Atari version. Don't give me that shit.
That's true. That's true. yeah, the DOS version, like, they made Donkey Kong into this pink nightmare creature. And the ZX Spectrum, of course, was famous for the fact that it couldn't, like, if a sprite was colored, it would color the entire block around the sprite. And so Donkey Kong half the time was just like this terrible red fire demon. Oh, and then in between stages, he looked like kind of like this totem pole creature that was even freakier somehow.
I'm going to have to look up footage on that.
How high can you get indeed?
Nice. So $8 on Arcade Archives Donkey Kong. What's your verdict?
I mean, look, Donkey Kong's not really my game, I will admit. It's up there with Pac-Man and like games that are so classic, I don't even like them. But if you like Donkey Kong at all, this is the version you have to get, because this is the true deal.
The version.
This is the version. I mean, there are only four versions of Donkey Kong that you should ever play, and that is this one and the NES version and I guess the Coleco version. And, of course, the 1994 Game Boy version, which attaches an entirely different game to the end of it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Or Country. So. We'll go with Donkey Kong Country, too.
Well, that's getting into a whole different thing. That's the progeny of Donkey Kong. I'm just straight up talking about Donkey Kong up in here. Word. Yeah, go buy it. $8. It's great. And support Hamster. So.
Awesome. Another Hamster game to talk about. Arcade Archives Ninja Kid, developed and published by Hamster, released April 5th on the Switch for $7.99. Infiltrate the castle and use your special shuriken and body slam to defeat enemies and get the treasure back. Ninja Kid is an action game that was released from the UPL in 1984. Chris, what is Ninja Kid?
Well, it's Ninja Kid, not to be confused with Kid Ninja or Kid Nicky Radical Ninja or Ninja Brothers. Or The Ninja Kids, which is a whole different game, or fucking Ninja Combat. So this is Ninja Kid, which is a game that probably doesn't mean a whole lot to American audiences, but it actually has quite a lot of history over in Japan. It spawned like this whole RPG series, an action side-scrolling platformer, and another action platformer that kind of branched off of it that they parodied in the Game Center CX game is Ninja Haggleman. Hmm. So all of those are from the family that started with Kid Ninja, Ninja Kid. I messed it up already.
Ninja Kid. Okay. It's confusing. There's so many kid ninjas out there for Ninja Kid to stand out as a Kid Ninja Ninja Kid.
Yeah, all the Ninja Kids. But no, the Ninja Kids is like a whole different game by Taito that I actually really like, so that's why it's really confusing me. But this game itself, what it is it is a fairly simple action platformer. It, like Donkey Kong, it goes across three different levels. In this one, they send you different varying levels of strength enemies. So like when you start, you're climbing a mountain, basically, and you hop up, you know, the top of the mountain, and the goal is to destroy all the enemies, so you'd never even have to really move. They can eventually come to you, but like your bubble bobbles and whatnot, eventually an invincible fireball is going to come and destroy you if you hang around too long.
Nice.
But if you hang around just before too long, you might get a weird glowing orb that floats through the sky, and if you collect three of them, you get bonus rounds.
Pro tip.
Which led to my favorite thing, and I'm going to send you a screenshot of it. When you get the three things and then you get to the bonus stage, it then says bonus level because you have three strange balls. So, action in the game is like it basically it controls a lot like Bubble Bobble. Honestly, that would be the one I would compare it to. You have a kind of floaty jump that you have to be running in order to use. So in order to jump onto the next platform, you have to be running left or right, because if you're standing still, which you will know that you're doing because your character puts his hands in the air immediately, which is odd, but I mean, I guess it's a ninja pose or something. If you do that, then you jump down. So continual movement is basically the way to get to the top of like all the levels, and that will throw you at first. You get used to it pretty quickly. And then you have an infinite shuriken shot, which of course will take out the enemies. It will also take out their projectiles, which they will throw at you mercilessly. So definitely being a sharpshooter with the sharp objects is key. Let's see. And then I'm trying to think of what they do at the end of the thing. So yeah, the first stage basically is comprised largely of ninjas with sunglasses on, which is always rad in my book. And then it kind of moves on to different like sort of yokai looking monsters and like just general Japanese ninja game cliches. You get ogres and there's some Tenchu, I think, that eventually you have to fight. All kinds of guys like that. And yeah, really the whole point of the game is just to get the best score. You can alternate one or two players. Of course, this being Hamster, you get all different modes that are available. And you know, your vertical mode, it's less modes than Donkey Kong, but I mean, the game was not as popular as Donkey Kong at all.
Yeah.
But still, it's solid. If you like a nice breezy ninja game, you like playing for score, and you like stuff that predates, like, you know, most things that you're familiar with, this is a great game to pick up.
Cool. So $8?
$8, yeah. I mean, if you know what you're getting into, or if you just want that nice score racking up type experience.
Sounds good. Next game to talk about is called Iro Hero, or Iro Hero. I'm still not sure how that one goes. Developed by Artax Games, published by East Asia Soft, released June 7th on the Switch in Europe, but was delayed to late June, early July in the U.S. It will be $12.99. The year is 2306, a century after the Nyagu taught mankind how to obtain electricity from their inner energy. Enterprises started to exploit humans in farms of produce energy. Would start as a gift, became a curse, reducing people to nothing more than simple power supplies. Only when his mother dies in one of these forms, Iro realizes he has the power to change the order of things. Chris, what is this game? And did I say the name right?
I don't know. There's no voice acting. So there's, as far as I can tell, no official pronunciation.
I figure Hero go with the rhyme scheme, right?
I just have to say, as far as that developer's name goes, Artax, don't die. You have to fight. Sorry. I made everyone sad.
Oh, you.
So, yeah, this is Iro Hero. I like Iro Hero. I think that works. It is a vertical shooter, which is something that is plentiful on the Switch, and thank goodness.
Good platform for it.
Yeah, I know. Well, interestingly enough, I'll come back to that. The plot, immediately you see it and you're just like, oh, it's the Matrix. Because, you know, they're harvesting humans for energy and all this other stuff. But the twist of this one, I guess, is that one of them kills the hero, Iro, is the titular hero. And I've said titular twice now, three times. Filler. So, yeah, they kill the hero's mom or something like that. So I guess he pilots a ship using the electricity in his body. And then also communicates with this other person who isn't really talked about at any point. And what happens there is that there's dialogue that goes on all throughout the levels, which, again, there's no voice acting. So while you're flying your ship, you have to read the sides of the screen if you want to actually catch the story between blasts.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so that's interesting. However, this is not your typical Japanese type, you know, bullet hell shooter type thing. So you're not actually, you know, constantly in the midst of a crescendo of bullets or anything like that. I believe I've heard this referred to before as Euro style. It's a lot more laid back. Enemies are a little slower. Your hitboxes are a little bit bigger. And also, you have 3 lives to get through any given stage, and the stages are very long. So this game actually becomes really difficult really quickly, only because of being unforgiving. which will double frustrate you at the fact that you're like, I could see that bullet traveling towards me slowly from like a million miles away, and I still got hit, and now I have to start the level over. It's one of those type of things. However, the main thrust of this game is that you can switch the color of your ship on the fly to correspond with the color of the weaponry that you see on screen. That probably will sound very familiar to you. With another game that just came out for $2 more, which I'm absolutely sure they did not intend to actually do, is, you know, to fully develop and release a game exactly at the time that Ikaruga comes out on the Switch.
Yeah, that's called timing.
Yeah, it's just timing. So yeah, the fact is that, like, when you're the blue ship, you absorb the blue bullets, and when you're the red ship, you absorb the red bullets. And the cool thing about it is that while you could just dodge the bullets, that's certainly a possibility, especially, again, because the screen never, like, fully fills up with them or anything like that. If you do absorb the bullets, then it will eventually raise your gauge up to where you can then throw a kind of heat-seeking lightning bolt that will chain destroy a bunch of enemies and rack up some score. I don't know that there's any function to the score. It's just, as somebody who plays these kind of games, it's always natural for me to pay attention to what the score does. So, yeah, you then the other thing about it is that it does not have any kind of vertical mode, which is very interesting, like, as far as, like, Switch stuff goes.
I think it's because they have the text on the sides?
Yeah, I think that they did that because the game was originally on Steam or something. I think it was on a different platform before. I think you mentioned that. And so I'm sure that they did it just to fill up the computer screen and didn't really bother to make a mode for the Switch. But yeah, like, if it was in vertical mode on the Switch, then that would take out, like, the entire dialogue portion of the screens, which would be great for players, but people who want to actually absorb the story will want those side panels in. Yeah. Fortunately, though, the game looks great. It is entirely sprite-based, which is actually kind of a novelty on the Switch. Apart from the arcade conversions, I don't think there's too much in the way of sprite-based, you know, shoot-em-ups. And characters look good. The explosions look good. And it's really fun to play. It's just, you'll really be sinking a lot of time into the same levels over and over. That's really the only warning I can give to anybody proceeding with this one.
Gotcha. Uh-huh. Overall, though, for $13 on this one, when it releases?
Yeah, go ahead and get it. I mean, if you're a shooter fan and you want something different, this is definitely different. I mean, I just compared it to Ikaruga, but it really does feel very different than said thing. It's kind of puzzly in a sense because it's very predictable. So sometimes getting out of a situation will require a little bit of memorization and a little bit of cleverness. Oh, I didn't mention that in like later levels, you get things like mirrors, which when you shoot them with the red bullet, they become blue bullets when they reflect. So then you have to start thinking opposite colors. And, you know, there's little tricks like that. Like, they actually incorporate a lot of clever things into this game. So I say do it just to support the developer, but also to play a really challenging but ultimately rewarding shmup.
Sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
All right, final game to talk about tonight is called Hexalogic, developed and published by Mythic Owl, released June 12th on the Switch for $2.99. Immerse yourself in the beautiful world of Hexalogic. Solve challenging yet rewarding puzzles, listen to relaxing music, dive deep in the game's atmosphere, and fall in love in Sudoku again. Chris, tell us about this one.
What do they mean, again?
For the people who may have fallen out of love with Sudoku.
I've never been in love with Sudoku.
Well, then, for the first time.
Bunch of numbers on papers. That's like a Vietnam flashback for me. I'm not going to mess with that. No, this game's way better than Sudoku. Or it's exactly the same as Sudoku, and I just didn't understand Sudoku the first time.
it's a little different from Sudoku, but I could see the inspiration.
Yeah. Well, this would be the second linking numbers together to make numbers math-style game that I've reviewed here, but I actually think this one might be the more fun of the two.
Ooh.
Maybe, perhaps less challenging, though, because whereas the other game, it took me, and I'm blanking on the title, I'm sorry, you'll have to, like, put it up there or something.
I don't remember either. We cover way too many games on this show for me to remember that shit.
Dude, it was like, it was from the Energy Breaker people. It might even be that game. I don't remember. But anyways, whereas that
Energy
one was
Balance?
Yeah, that might be the one. Yeah, I think that is. So, whereas I was only able to complete, like, I think 10 levels on that one in the week that I played it. I played this one over the weekend and I'm in level 42.
Oh.
So, yeah. So, yeah, this is a basically all of the tiles are arranged like hexagons, all linked together. And at the end of any two of them that are linked together will be a number. So let's say 5. And so using the three numbers that you have available, which would be 1, 2, and 3, you then fill in the hexagons with which numbers will equal the number that's on the end. However, then they link together more of them, and each one has to be the right combination of numbers to add up to all the different ends. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, cool. And once you do that, it just moves you right on. And then suddenly it's been 2 hours and you're in like level 30 and you're just like sitting there just punching in stuff.
It really did turn into one of those, oh, one more puzzle. I picked this one up myself because it was only $3 and yeah. I thought it looked really cool. And I appreciated the simplicity of it, especially because there's only the numbers 1 through 3 that you can use. So
yes.
It limits how complex it could be, but when they add more and more branches, it makes it more complex while still being approachable.
Yes, exactly. And here's another thing. I know you didn't spend as much time on this as I did, but starting in level 40, they actually add in more things. So they start to add in hexagons that when you punch in one number into one, all of the corresponding ones that are glowing the same will also turn into that number.
Ooh.
So then you're doing like 2 or 3, 4 at a time. And then you have to strategize around that. So that actually became really fun too.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, and I like that this game will ease you into the concept with like 12 easy levels. they do not drop you into the deep end. They very much cover you in like flotation devices and like kind of paddle you out there. Like an inch
Which
at a time.
It's a good way to do it, especially when a game has a lot of puzzles with it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I was very thrilled with that. And yeah, it does not take very long to pick up on this game at all. Like anybody that's afraid of like these math, logic, number type things, this is a good one to do. Because even if you're not like sitting there thinking like 4 steps ahead of the band or whatever to try and get the correct numbers, like you can just start punching in stuff and just change it whenever, like you'll eventually get it.
Yeah.
There's only 3 options and it's like if you just keep plugging in, you'll eventually like just start plugging them in randomly and then be like, oh yeah, if I adjust this to this and if I just adjust that to that, then I got it. And that actually, did you play it with the touchscreen?
Oh, of course I did.
Yeah Well, I just got
yeah,
me
boy
some- I got me a nice screen now, so I've been playing touchscreen games too.
Nice.
It actually is really good on the touchscreen and without, because they assign each of the face buttons Y, X, and A to the 1, 2, and 3s, so that you could just push one button to get the right number into the slot that you're
cool.
choosing. Yeah, or you could just tap it the number of times that you want it to show up on the touchscreen mode. So
that's pretty cool.
Damn, but this game is like solid for what it is.
Yeah, so $3 on this one. I have a feeling this is going to be a good verdict, but $3, what do you think?
Yeah. $3, definitely get it. I mean, this is like, if nothing else, this is a game that you can just throw on there and give to mom.
Oh, God, yeah, you can. My mom would love this fucking game. Holy shit.
You just like set it in front of her and just watch her get hooked. My mom got really hooked on Bejeweled, so, and then Candy Crush and all that other stuff, and she likes logic puzzles, so.
My mom could wreck face at Dr. Mario.
Yeah. So, this is a very accessible, very good puzzle game. Honestly, it could be more expensive.
Don't give them ideas.
No, seriously, though, $3. Go get it. Support that developer. Have them make more games, because these are really good.
Awesome. Sounds good. Well, Chris, always good having you on here chatting about these games. That is it for this episode. Thanks again to Purnell for dropping by and doing some reviews as well and talking about E3. Chris, do you have any final words to end the show?
I don't know. Fiery Demon Monkeys. That was pretty good.
Yeah, it was.